canopyclub.com or by following the Canopy Club on all social media platforms.
You are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Now stay tuned for Disability Beat. This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Jim Mayer, training specialist for the Illinois Center for Transition and Work, or ICTW. But first, disability news for the week of April 28th, 2025. This month, the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives approved the draft budget projecting savings of $1.5 trillion over 10 years. The draft does not specify what programs would be cut, but it asked the House Energy and Commerce Committee, which oversees Medicaid, to find at least $880 billion in savings. Now, members of Congress must detail exactly how they will make that happen, and disability advocates are bracing for a fight. Christopher Banks, president and CEO of the Autism Society of America, said, quote, "We are deeply concerned that Medicaid will be targeted, putting critical services for individuals with autism and developmental disabilities at severe risk. Cuts of this magnitude could dismantle decades of progress in community-based care, leaving families without access to therapies, residential supports, and essential health care," end quote. Though President Donald Trump and other Republicans say they won't target Medicaid, it's unclear how Congress could achieve the amount of savings called for without cutting that program. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office said that when Medicare is excluded, Medicaid accounts for 93% of mandatory spending under the House Energy and Commerce Committee. However, given that the committee is expected to oversee only $581 billion in spending outside of Medicare and Medicaid, there's no way to achieve $880 billion in cuts without cutting both or either of the health programs. Concern is also being expressed by some Republicans. A recent letter signed by 12 members of Congress to the congressional leadership says, quote, "We cannot and will not support a final reconciliation bill that includes any reduction in Medicaid coverage for vulnerable populations," end quote. Currently, over 700,000 people are on waiting lists for Medicaid waivers, which provide home and community-based services, and even those with waivers have struggled to get supports in recent years. As part of a new effort to study autism, the National Institutes of Health are gathering private medical records from federal and commercial databases, including pharmacy chains, lab tests, and data from patients treated by the Department of Veterans Affairs and Indian Health Services, private insurance claims, and data from smartwatches and fitness trackers. The NIH is also in talks with the Centers for Medicare and Medicare and Medicaid Services to increase access to its data. According to Dr. J. Bhattacharya, head of the NIH, the data will allow 10 to 20 groups of outside researchers to study comprehensive patient data with broad coverage of the U.S. population for the first time. Bhattacharya did not give details on how the research teams would be selected, but said they will not be able to download the data. As part of the study, a new disease registry is being launched to track Americans with autism. Details on the registry and what information it will track were not immediately clear, and an HHS official later denied that a registry is even in the works. The announcement from Bhattacharya further solidifies an ongoing shift away from supporting people with autism to live in their community, said Stacy Converse, managing attorney and leader of disability rights Rights Maine's Disability Rights Maine's Developmental Disabilities Team. According to Converse, quote, there's a shift away from supporting people in the community, which for decades has been the goal, to find a medical cause that I don't think exists. This is a huge step backward. It's quite frankly heartbreaking, end quote. Nancy Cronin, executive director of the Maine Developmental Disabilities Council, said that Kennedy's comments, quote, would have been more appropriate from somebody speaking in 1950. This is a huge, huge undertaking in which a person's information is going to be evaluated for unknown reasons, and it's going to be unclear how well or thorough or coordinated these different databases are. That the data likely will not be a complete picture without a good deal of thought and planning, end quote. And finally, the film Unleashing Hope, The Power of Service Dogs for Children with Autism, spotlights how a service dog named Kuma improved the lives of actor Rosie O'Donnell and her child Clay, who has autism. In addition to Clay, the documentary features the family of a child named Caleb, 9, who has autism and who is taking the first steps toward receiving a service dog. It also reveals how the animals are trained. Unleashing Hope will be available on Hulu starting tomorrow. And that's the news for this week.
I love my dog as much as I love you. But you may fade, my dog will always come through. All he asks from me is the food to give him strength. All he ever needs is love, and that he knows he'll get. So I love my dog as much as I love you, but you may fade, my dog will always come.
You are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm glad to welcome my good friend Jim Mayer back in the studio. Jim's been on the show before in a different role, in a different year, but glad to connect again. Jim is now the training specialist for the Illinois Center for Transition and Work. And this is based at the university, right, Jim?
Yes, right here in Urbana-Champaign for the past 5 years.
Okay, so how did you get there? Tell the listeners a little bit about who you are and how you ended up there.
All right, sure. So I have worked in the field of disability services for many years. I'm a certified rehab counselor with also a lot of training in special education. I worked in adult services out in the Monticello area for 15 years at Piatt County Mental Health Center, coordinating supported employment services for adults with disabilities there. And then in 2001, I came to the Champaign County, I better start over again. It's a lot of initials. The Rural Champaign County Special Education Cooperative.
Ah, so you did that well.
Thanks. Got through it. So I was there at that organization for 21 years, coordinating vocational and other transition services for students with disabilities throughout Champaign County. So just retired from that in 2022 and happened then to land a position with this new center. It had just been in existence a couple of years, and so now I've been at the center just shy of 3 years.
Yeah, and until you started working there and had this big symposium last month, or yes, it was this month, earlier, like a week ago or so,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, late last week.
And I never even had heard of it before.
Right. Yeah, we're fairly, you know, a fairly new player, I guess you could say, mm-hmm. in terms of disability support services. The Illinois State Board of Education funds us, and they saw a need for more support in the schools for students with the most significant disabilities, especially around preparation for work, mm-hmm. because we were just, you know, seeing even after a number of years of special education legislation requiring that we work on transition and work skills, still this population of folks with the most significant disabilities were not achieving the outcomes that they want as far as employment, and so are at least many of them were not achieving those outcomes. The numbers, you know, were too low, considering all of the years we've been working on this. And so I thought it was a really wise move of the State Board of Education to to see the need for an initiative like this. Mm-hmm. And so we provide support services primarily in the schools, but also to parents. You know, we have some resources that would are certainly valuable to parents and to students with disabilities. But we do work primarily with schools on things like technical assistance to improve their programming. We also provide regional trainings, statewide trainings like the symposium we had. And then we have a really very comprehensive website with a lot of resources on it. And that's one of the things I'd love to talk about this evening, because that's something anybody can access at any time.
Right. Well, let's go ahead and do that.
All right. Great. So we have, as I said, quite an extensive website. It's an easy site to remember. You just take the initials of our center, ictw.illinois.edu.
That's is easy. Usually those URLs for the university are horrible.
Right.
Can't so, even tell them on air.
Right. So if it's all right, I'll repeat that again for
yes,
our listeners
absolutely.
Who may want to jot it down. It's ictw.illinois.edu.
Very good. I'll post that on my Facebook page, too, for Disability Beat Radio. So
great.
People Wonderful. Can have access to it there. If you didn't get a pen in time, you'll have it.
Wonderful, wonderful. And there are a number of resources on that website. If you don't mind, I can talk
Oh, sure.
about some of those. One of them that you and I were chatting about just before this interview is it's fairly hot off the presses. It's only been in existence now just over a year. It's the School to Work Transition Guide for Illinois, which is a nicely comprehensive guide and yet not dense. You know, we formed a work group, a study group statewide. Individuals were part of that. It included experienced teachers in transition. It included rehabilitation counselors who've worked with transition-aged youth for mm-hmm. you know a number of years. Also, some administrators with the State Board of Education and with the State Division of Rehab Services. And that study group put this guide together. And our goal really was to take the mystery or mystique out of transition, and in one guide. It's just a 22-page guide. On our website, it has a lot of great information. It has links embedded in it, which is, you know, one beauty of making it an online resource like that is you can embed links to different, you know, resources within it. So anyway, it you know, one of the things it does, for instance, is it takes all of those terms and acronyms that are thrown about in you know in the disability services field and explains them in layman's terms. So that, you know, let's say a parent and a student who are new to the transition process, who are hearing all these initials for the first time and wanting to understand these programs and can go straight to that. It's in fact, the first thing in the guide is this list of terms. It also has, you know, all of the aspects of the IEP transition plan, the individual education plan for each student has to have a transition plan at age 14 for students in Illinois. And so that the guide breaks down all those aspects of that transition plan in the IEP. It even gives some nice job descriptions, really, for everyone, for all the key players on a transition team, including for the student and the parent. You know what?
Excellent. What, if you walk into their room, you always wonder, who are all these people? And, you know your kid's teacher, but who are the rest of them?
Exactly. And it even gives, you know, some helpful pointers. You know, how can a student prepare for their own IEP mm-hmm. meeting? How can the parent prepare? How can you fully participate in your meeting? There's a lot of emphasis on that, on student participation. So important, you know, it's the student's life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they need to be a key player. And the guide also talks about, again, in layman's terms, you know, understandable terms, some of the legislation around transition, both on the federal level and the state level, a lot of those things that pertain to families.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are broken down and explained in, like I say, layman's terms. So that's one thing. The School to Work Transition Guide is there prominently on our website. We also have a lot of other resources that are very handy to use. We have webinars on a number of different topics. We have research briefs, fact sheets, case studies, you know, and some of the topics are, you know, things like customized employment, pathways to employment, self-determination, transition assessment, the WIOA Act, the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, which pertains to folks with disabilities, of course. Also, we talk about work-based learning experience ideas and other work, a lot of work-related topics. We are the Center for Transition and Work.
Yeah.
So that gives kind of, you know, a brief overview of the website and what it includes. Other questions, Vicki?
Yeah. So you've been working with students with disabilities for a long time and finding jobs for lots and lots of folks. But it seems in the world today that for adult services anyway, that people who have disabilities have to have very mild disabilities and need very little support to actually be employed, because it's so expensive for providers to provide, you know, an assistant to support an individual who wants to work outside of a day program or a sheltered workshop. So what kind of solutions does this project envision for those folks who have more significant disabilities?
Right, great question. And I will say that that needle is being pushed in Illinois. You know, there was a recent legislation signed into law that basically abolishes sub-minimum wage jobs.
Yes, we did celebrate that too, yes.
Aha, yes. And so, you know, our adult service community in Illinois is having to scramble and make some adjustments. You know, some agencies kind of saw this coming and have prepared themselves to kind of change the way that they do business, so to speak, the way mm-hmm. that they provide services, to focus more on community employment and less on sheltered work activities. There are other agencies in the state that I think are behind on that. But there are some resources for that, too. There's a similar, almost a sister organization to ours here at the U of I that is helping adult service agencies make that transition. And, you know, so they're basically doing for a lot of the kind of technical assistance for adult agencies that my ICTW does for the schools. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, we're sort of like sister organizations. That one is called SWTSE, which stands for the Subminimum Wage to Competitive Integrated Employment.
Oh, yeah, there's
program.
A nice one.
Yeah, again, a lot of initials in this field, but, you know, they call it SWTSE for short. And that project has worked with six adult service agencies throughout the state, and now they're developing some resources similar to this school-to-work transition guide that mm-hmm. our center developed. They're developing some similar resources for that adult service community to, again, assist them in sort of gearing up to provide, you know, a different kind of services, a more community-based kind of service where mm-hmm. there's a focus on community employment and, you know, community volunteerism, no more sheltered work activity. Because, you know, the needle has been moving that way for decades, I would say, you know, that recognition that folks with disabilities want to be out in their community just like everybody else. They don't want to be in a segregated area, you know, doing sheltered work. And it's taken some time, but finally, many states like Illinois have basically, you know, put it into law that idea of segregated work for subminimum wages is really, it's not a great way to go.
But it could take a long while to make that a reality. I think I had a conversation with Alan Bergman, who was your keynote speaker for the symposium that you did a couple weeks ago. And according to Alan, he says 3% of people with disabilities in Illinois actually have employment, compared with, you know, much larger percentages, 80-90% in some of the states that are doing mm-hmm. a better job.
Yeah, I think he showed us that statistic. I think that was for folks with developmental disabilities who are SSI recipients, specifically.
He was kind of looking
mm-hmm. at some of those statistics, and it was kind of shockingly low, Vicki, the numbers of folks who are, you know, involved in employment. And you know, the thing that's really sad about it is, you know, many of these individuals who are not getting the opportunity to work have great, great gifts to share, you know, with our employers. And with the folks those employers serve, mm-hmm. I've seen it myself. You've seen it, I'm sure. And so, our society is missing out on something. Plus, you know, as far as that whole SSI or you know, Social Security disability or supplemental security income, those, you know, are intended, just as the name says, supplemental security income. It's intended to be supplemental to whatever else you might earn. And really, I think that's part of it. Is folks need to know that, you know, you don't instantly lose your benefits when you start working. There are incentives out there and, you know, great ways to kind of, you know, use that to supplement your income if needed. But, you know, where you're better off for working, you know, almost always financially better off.
Not only just financially.
Right.
You know, having relationships, having a purpose.
Exactly.
And doing something that's useful to other people. I mean, all of that.
Right. It's a human rights issue, as you say, you know, really beyond the financial. Although, you know, we all want to have a little financial capital, right, to spend. But you're right. It goes much beyond that to really just the dignity. In fact, the new law is called the Dignity and Pay Act,
right?
And for good reason. For good reason, because there's dignity that goes with working and with, you know, contributing to your community and just being out there doing it.
Yeah, well,
you know?
that is so true. And I have had, but in the past, I've been in disability for a very long time as well, and now retired more than you are. And I've heard so many people say to me, my son or daughter can't work because they would lose their benefits. So I don't think we can emphasize that enough, that this is, SSI is a supplement to what people should be doing by earning a wage of some kind.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, they have, like I say, some pretty kind policies. I mean, Social Security wants people to consider working. And, you know, there are not only the incentives, as I mentioned, but, you know, they have a formula where your benefits don't disappear immediately and where you're able to retain things you might need, like Medicaid. Or Medicare, if you're on Social Security disability, you might also have access to Medicare. And, you know, for folks with developmental disabilities, that's very important because Medicaid pays for not just health care, but for services.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's and that's particularly important. And I don't want to underemphasize that, but what I want to, I guess, convey is that there are incentives and ways to hold on to some of those benefits that you might really vitally need, but also have that opportunity to work.
Right, right. So what are the issues? What are the things that really prevent people from getting jobs out of high school? You know, you have these great transition programs. This book looks amazing. I'll be reading it as soon as we get done, but I just don't understand why we have so many problems in Illinois as compared to other states.
Right. It is kind of sometimes confounding. It is. But, you know, on the positive side, there are many good things happening in the schools. I've seen that through this job now with the Center for Transition and Work, because I've had a chance to travel the state quite a bit and work with mm-hmm. different schools and meet people in the schools. There are a lot of creative and cool things happening in the schools. And also I've seen and heard about a lot of creative, cool things happening in adult services. Mm. But we really need more of that creativity to be wider spread. And, you know, so that's why these centers exist here at the university. And
change is hard,
you know.
And if you're used to doing your job in a certain way and only placing certain people in employment, you've got your way of doing that. And to do something completely different is hard.
Right. And it's a little scary, right? Change can be scary for whether you're a provider, whether you're a parent, you know, if you've grown accustomed to a certain way, you know, that things would happen, let's say, when your son or daughter, you know, leaves the school system and is looking for those adult services. But it's a different mindset. And really, you know, I think that some of our funding sources have tried to make it more, you know, appealing or convenient for organizations to provide, you know, those mm-hmm. more up-to-date services, if you will. But it doesn't happen overnight.
No.
You know.
We have learned that for sure.
Exactly.
So if a school, school districts contact you to provide that technical support to them?
They do. They do. We call it Targeted Technical Assistance, TTA for short. We've got to have some initials in there,
of
Vicki.
Of course. You got to expand those acronym lists.
Right. There's got to be another acronym. But anyway, our TTA services, our technical assistance services, are available to any district or cooperative. You know, there are a lot of special ed cooperatives in Illinois that are, you know, kind of a group of school districts banded together to provide special ed services. So a co-op or a district that has some goals for improving their transition programming, especially around work and work preparation for folks with the most significant needs, that's kind of our target as a center. And so if the school has some goals to improve their programming around those parameters, they can complete this application. It's on our website. It's pretty basic application. And mm-hmm. And then we kind of review that as a team, get back to them, talk about, you know, kind of firming up those goals and who would do what their team would do, what our team would do, and what we do kind of cooperatively. And it's usually over at least a one-year period. We try to make it as convenient as possible for the schools, so it's a rolling application. You know, any time during the year they can mm-hmm. apply, and we generally get back to them within a month or two to kind of try to firm things up. So we're currently, this past year, we worked with 12 different districts and cooperatives.
Wow.
And that's our goal, is to serve at least 10 per year.
Is that in East Central Illinois, or is that statewide?
Statewide. Mm-hmm. But basically that means, I mean, every region, you know, there are six regions that the State Board of Education has. And so we kind of look at the states split up that way. In fact, our team kind of, each of us has a specialty region that we work with. So I work with Region 4, which is, you know, where we're sitting here in East Central mm-hmm. Illinois. And so we had schools from all six regions participating in our technical assistance. And you know, like I said, generally it's a one-year duration, so, you know, we'll have a new batch for next year of schools that we're working with on these technical assistance goals.
Sure. So what are some of the big successes that you can name from doing the work that you have so far? You've only been with them a short amount of time, right?
Right, about just shy of 3 years. Uh-huh. Some of the cool things we've done, you know, we've expanded our regional trainings. We offer two topics per year, one in the fall and one in the spring. Mm-hmm. And for each of those topics, and it's an all-day training, an intensive training, and something like, you know, transition assessment or job development is another example.
Are these for school staff then?
Primarily, okay. Yeah. We mm-hmm. have some rehab counselors who come too, but it's primarily special educators who come mm-hmm. to these trainings. So now we offer each of those topics in three locations, one in the northern part of the state, one in the central part, and one in the southern. So we mm-hmm. do a fall cycle like that, where we take that topic on the road to three locations. And then in the spring, again, mm-hmm. We have another topic that we take to three locations. So that we've done the last several years, where we've had these regional trainings where we're kind of coming close to people so they can, you know, it's a doable drive for them. And the other thing we do is we make all of our trainings extremely affordable. We know that schools, you know, money is tight in many school districts, and, you know, the State Board of Ed funds us, and so we only charge if we are needing to serve food, because our grant doesn't cover food.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a very recent, like our symposium is, you know, like $80 for a day and a half conference, which, you know, is incredibly
for
reasonable.
For a school district, that's doable. So,
right.
Yeah, they
right.
can, that's probably one of the less expensive things that they would fund for teachers.
Right.
So that's good news. So we're almost out of time, as you know, this time does go quickly when you have so much to talk about. But I do want to make sure that people have the contact information for your website. And if they're interested in getting anything that you've talked about today, where they might find it.
Great. Yeah. So our website is ictw.illinois.edu. And in particular, I want to highlight, if you're interested in looking at our school's work transition guide, it's prominently placed there on the website.
It looks pretty awesome. Thank you so much for joining me today, Jim Mayer, training specialist for the Illinois Center for Transition and Work.
Thank you, Vicki.
Thanks for your work.
Mm-hmm.
This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great rest of your week.
No, I'll stand my ground. Won't be down, gonna stand my ground, and I won't back down. pushing me around, but I'll stand my ground.
Programming at WEFT is supported in part by Habitat for Humanity of Champaign County and the Habitat Restore. When you donate, volunteer, or shop at the Habitat Restore, you're invested in building homes, communities, and hope throughout Champaign County. Learn more about Habitat for Humanity of Champaign at cuhabitat.org or follow them on Facebook and Instagram.
You are tuned to WEFT Champaign, 90.1 FM Community Radio for East Central Illinois, and streaming online at weft.org and the new WEFT app. Be sure and check that out.